a frequency beyond space and time.
Unspeakable knowledge. It is Mad Tower Radio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the long-awaited return of Mad Tower Radio. This is your host, Dan, and I'm joined by my co-host, Christian.
We've been lost in the woods for a minute. Hello, it's good to be back, finally.
Yeah, it's been a long time coming, but I'm really happy to just be behind the mic today. What have you been up to in the meantime, Christian?
I haven't left this room since our last recording. I've been blasting out help signs and Uber Eat requests since May of last year, and nothing gets in. And
May of last year, I actually managed to make contact with the Mantis aliens, and I've been out with them. I'd tell you guys all about it, but, you know, standard alien procedure. They had to wipe my memory. I have bits and pieces here and there, but I can't really recall, you know. But, oh well. At least I'm back here and ready to tell you about some stuff. Christian, if we have any new listeners, why don't you go ahead and tell them what this show's all about?
Oh, absolutely. So here at the Mad Tower Radio, we're trying to take a bit of a closer look at the world around us. And each week, we come together, me and Dan, and we share another interesting, horrifying thing that we've discovered. It can be a creature, a conspiracy, or a story that we just found pretty damn fascinating. And slowly, we're gonna make our way up to the top of that mad tower and see over the entire world with our forbidden knowledge.
That about sums it up. What do you got for me today, Christian? All I know is the name of it.
Oh, did I send you a name?
Yeah, you slipped the name.
Okay, fantastic. So I'm pretty smitten with semi-vampiric creatures.
Mm-hmm.
I'd just recently read a book, and it goes into this strange similarity in a bunch of different cultures throughout the world of blood-sucking, vampiric creatures, and it really got me going. So when I knew we were coming back, I decided on the Manananggal. Okay. Does this ring any bells for you? Anything you've ever heard of?
I know that you let it slip that it is a Filipino, right?
Yes, it is a creature from the Philippine Islands.
See, I don't know much about the Philippines. I do know that they have, like, whack-ass vampires.
So my sort of preface for this in the green room when we were texting each other about what we wanted to do, I called this one the Filipino Cryptid War.
That's pretty insane sounding right from the get-go.
So it's going to build a little bit, but I wanted to start the discussion with this creature. Now, the Manananggal has some pretty standard vampiric attributes, you know, goes out at night, blood-sucking, followed by bat-like creatures. But the thing that makes this one special is its translation.
Mm-hmm.
It loosely can be described as the remover or the separator.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So the Manananggal usually portrays itself as a raggedy old woman, maybe sometimes a beautiful woman, but usually on the feminine side.
Mm-hmm.
And late at night, it will do this ritual out in the woods by itself, where it rips itself in half and wings sprout out from the opening of its, like, bisection.
Oh.
And it's just a top-half vampire. Flies around, just, you know, ribs up, wings out, guts.
Flies.
Confettiing.
It just flies around in half?
Yes. The top half goes out and hunts. The bottom half stays out in the woods.
That's really weird. You know, I haven't heard of any other cryptid or creature that, like, works like that, where it just separates and goes, you know?
It's maybe, like, I'm trying to figure out where or what kind of culture sort of stems this kind of monster, because, like the book says, a lot of these creatures that we build comes from the culture around us, the environment we're a part of. I don't know if there's any, like, lizards that, you know, lose their tails in the Philippines, or that's something that these people see a lot, but it...
Yeah.
It's crazy. So, I'm going to send you...
Come the, from the first photo us, you mean like
of the
would it say Omanango? like the physical makeup or of like the world around them in that area, or do you mean the culture where like the monster reflects?
I mean that as well. Both of those aspects are what goes into creating the cryptids that haunt a certain society.
Yeah,
so take a look at that. Yeah, it's sick. And they're known to hunt pregnant women.
Specifically?
They, in some myths, love the taste of fetuses inside the belly.
Ah.
So they're going to go for that. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That's an acquired taste, certainly.
That they'll use their tongue to, you know, go get that fetus, like a reverse xenomorph, if you would.
Mm. Hate that. Damn, and, that's like, you know, that's like brutal.
This thing, it lives so strongly, from what I can tell, in Filipino culture. The first film ever produced in the Philippines was about this monster called the Manananggal.
Hmm.
There's a survival horror video game where you're running from the beast.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
So, like, it's pretty popular in their culture, huh?
From what I can tell, it at least lives pretty firmly in people's minds. It's a well-known creature from that area.
Have you seen Trace on Netflix?
No, I think that's what it's that? Called.
It's like a new anime that's like adapted from a Filipino graphic novel, and it's like about like this girl who's like a cryptid hunter.
I will definitely check that out and try to find this beast in that show.
I'm thinking that if we give it a watch, the Manananggal is probably in there, and that's pretty cool.
And it's a pretty fleshed out myth. Like it there's a lot of sort of things you can do to combat this beast. There's, you know, the usual salt circle. There's garlic. There's, you know, the stingray tail.
A stingray tail.
They don't like the tail of the stingray. You can make a whip and fight it back with that. And my favorite one, if you do not want a Manananggal to come back, yeah, when it goes out at night and it hunts, it, you know, separates top from bottom.
Uh-huh.
If you can go out in the woods and find its bottom half, you can destroy it or move it. And if it doesn't put its two halves back together by the time the sun comes up, it's done.
Damn.
You just, like, hide its legs.
Conversely, imagine that, like, you're walking through the woods and you just see, like, a pair of legs. I think that'd be equally as bad as seeing the Manananggal.
Yeah, if you just find its bottom half? No thanks.
So, you said something about the Filipino cryptid war?
Yes.
So where does the war come in?
There's a second half to this this creature that I'd like to let you know about. So, what is your familiarity with the sort of post-war, the Second World War, with the Philippines?
Not much, but I know that in recent years, the Philippines have started their own war on drugs.
That's true.
I don't know. it wouldn't seem that far-fetched to me if the president of the Philippines started giving out bounties for the Mananongal as well.
So, during the Second World War, the Japanese Imperial Army invades the islands, as it does, you know, most of Southeast Asia.
Mm-hmm.
And that begins a pretty widespread home resistance.
Uh-huh.
Now, after the war, the United States does what it does best, comes on in, not a year after the war ends, I believe, and it says, okay, we're going to help install order, help rebuild the country after this long, devastating war.
Yeah.
And they were not met with flowers and roses and so there's this fine gentleman by the name of let me find it here, Air Force Brigadier General Edward G. Lansdale.
Uh-huh.
Ever heard of the fella?
Nope, never in my life.
Dude's in charge of controlling the rebel forces, keeping these locals from, you know, causing too much damage while the United States is nation building in the Philippines.
Uh-huh.
So I'm going to read you a quote from his memoir after he'd gotten out, after his tour of duty had ended.
Yeah.
So Air Force Brigadier General Edward G. Lansdale says, "A combat Psy War squad was brought in. It planted stories among town residents of an Anzhuang, which is a catch-all term for cryptids, and in this case, meaning the Mananongal."
Okay. So
it plants the story among town residents of a Mananongal living in the hill where the rebels were based. Two nights later, after giving the story some time, the Psy War squad makes their way up to a hill camp and sets an ambush for the rebels. When the patrol comes, they are ambushed silently, snatched up, and punctured in the neck.
What?
Vampire style. Yeah, they're poked in the neck and left hanging by their heels so that their blood will drain.
Holy shit.
They strung up these rebels and allowed other comrades to come and find their bloodless comrades who believed that the Mananongal got them, and they would be next if they remained in those hills. So when daylight came, Edward G. Lansdale says the whole squadron moved out.
That's fucking insane.
Mm-hmm.
Damn.
Mm-hmm. Man used local myth, used, you know, local terror to get the job done.
Wow, that's fucking crazy, actually.
Like, imagine if a foreign army finds itself in the United States and starts leaving, like, fake Bigfoot traps around, or it makes Jersey Devil attacks happen in your area.
That'd be fucking crazy.
Or, like, they start planting bombs on your bridges, so you think the Mothman's here coming for your infrastructure?
See, I've always wondered about that, is, like, how many times have we been fooled by, like, a scene that was just meant to look like it was a cryptid or Bigfoot or the Mananongal or anything, and, like, we just, like, it worked, and, you know, we bought it, and, like, this completely unexplained event was just totally staged.
Hmm. Does anything particular come to mind?
No.
Okay.
Not really, actually.
I just found this instance so interesting because of sort of the intersection between, you know, the myth and the culture and, like, real practical business being done with that fear. Like, it seemed like a really tangible effect that, like, if you believe in something, you know, you can manifest that in places. Like, if you think about cryptids all the time and you're worried about them, you know, you're going to see some things out in the woods at night.
Oh, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. And I mean, that's like, see, like, as being someone that's as into this whole cryptid culture as I am, you know, like, I have to have everything viewed as skepticism, you know? Because if mm-hmm. I just believe any Joe off the street that's just like, yeah, I saw Bigfoot, he fucking ran through my backyard and, like, did a fucking backflip and, like, the Fortnite dance and ran back into the woods, you know? Like, if I just believe every Tom, Dick, and Harry that says they saw Bigfoot, like, I don't know, man. Like, it's just, it loses. Like, I'm gonna trick myself into eventually being like, any stick snapping in the woods is like, oh fuck, that was Bigfoot. And like, I just think if you're really into cryptids, you should probably have a lens of skepticism so that you're not getting your chain yanked, you know?
That's sort of the mentality I had to put in, especially when we were getting into some of these conspiracy theories earlier on in the show. I approached them, you know, kind of wanting to be a part of it, but also having to sort of separate myself from jumping in headfirst, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You know?
That being said, though, if any Tom, Dick, or Harry is walking down the street and wants to tell me about a monster that they saw, yeah, I want to hear that.
Oh, I'm all ears. Tell me about it.
Come find me.
Tell me about it, because that shit would be awesome.
Yeah.
But, like, I don't know. Have you ever heard stories before where you can just tell that the person is being, like, super genuine, and then you hear other stories and you're like, alright, about half of this is fucking, like, made up?
There's a certain energy, a certain, yeah, sincereness, yeah, that people will give you. That's the stuff that sort of makes me give it a second thought.
Uh-huh. Because, I mean, no way do I think that there's people, like, there's no way that everyone and their mother is just like, oh, dude, I'm going to lie about a Bigfoot sighting for fame, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's no way that every single person is just like, oh, dude, I can just lie about this and get famous, you know? I think it's got to be in, like, thirds, you know, where, like, one, like, the first third, they're making it up. The second third is, like, just absolute ignorance, you know? It was a bear, but they saw it from an angle.
Okay.
And that, like, oh shit, that's Bigfoot, and they just don't know any better. And then, like, the third has got to be, I gotta believe it, man. You know, I've heard some stories where I'm just like, why would you make this up? You know?
There's a particular peer that I have who is controlled by the fear of seeing this creature that he's seen twice before. That, yeah, I am pretty willing to give him my faith.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I've heard plenty of stories that I'm like, fuck. That's, I don't know. That's nuts. That's real. You know, I don't know what you saw, but I don't want to see it. You know, and it always makes it better when it comes with, like, just that sliver of, like, what you could consider
yes.
hard evidence, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I actually have a story like that for you today.
Ooh.
When it just has that tiny little sliver of hard evidence, and it's pretty fucking cool. But please, I didn't mean to derail us this far from the Mononongo. Please.
That's, I'd pretty much given you everything I had for my short little report. There is one other pretty interesting detail. I had told you that they fly around with an entourage of bats.
Oh, yeah.
They're bat-like creatures, let's say. They have an advanced strategy where they'll make this clicking noise,
uh-huh.
right? And the farther away the clicking noises sound, the closer the Mononongal is supposed to be to you. Like, it casts its clicks farther away so that you think it's somewhere else. Like, it's said to be very good at, like, tricking you with sound.
Damn, that's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
Is there, like, a large mm-hmm. bat population in the Philippines?
Honestly, no clue. I don't know what's up with bats. Bats are crazy. They're everywhere.
Because, you know, there's some giant, giant bats.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And, like, if mm-hmm. you saw one flying at night, you know, you could easily think you saw the Mononongal, you know?
Oh, absolutely. Let me give you this next picture. This is a Mononongal sighting photo.
Oh, I'm excited for this.
So tell me what you see. There you go.
So
that's the top half of a demon.
Yeah, that's just the top half of a demon. It looks like it has horns.
He kind of looks like the bad gremlin.
Spike?
Mohawk man? Yeah, Spike. Kind of looks like Spike.
That's pretty good. That's pretty funny, actually. Let me look up the Philippines bat population. Because I just want to know if, like, there's enough mm-hmm. bats there for you to just be like, oh, you know, to be like, oh, okay, mm-hmm. that's
there
a
he
bat.
Is.
Or if, like, this is just something completely foreign, you know?
And it seems to be a pretty stalwart piece of culture. I'd seen this interview where a guy who's like an office worker in the capital, he's like an older dude, and he's like, yeah, I seen him. Like, he came for uh-huh. this lady I live next to.
Okay, check this out. The giant golden-crowned flying fox, also known as the golden-capped fruit bat, is a species of mega bat endemic
oh,
to the Philippines.
Shit. Not the mega bat.
Here, I'm going to send you an image right here.
Great.
I could easily mistake this as the top half of a person. For sure.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Yeah, no, it's a flying fox, not a bat.
No, that's a dude. That's a man.
Yeah.
Oh,
I don't. That doesn't even need to be a fucking a cryptid. Like, if I saw that, like, it's time to go home forever.
I hate this so much.
Here's another one.
Oh. He's huge.
Picture of a human-sized bat from the Philippines goes viral. Netizens spooked out.
Yeah, no, I could definitely understand a late at night walking at sunset or something like that, and you see this beast
and
coming out over
yeah,
the tree line.
You see that?
Oh, yeah.
I don't know about that.
I love this. Overall, yeah, Mononongal, A-plus monster. Sick design, cool story, nice, like, historical incidents. Like, it's all around a fantastic story.
I like the Mononongal. It's pretty cool. It's interesting. It's got a unique design. Because, like, as much as I love cryptids, I get tired of, like, Bigfoot likes. You know?
Hairy monkey.
And
yeah.
It'll have, like, such a cool name, too. And they'll be like, oh, what is it? And it's like, it's just a big hairy thing in the woods. And it's like, okay.
Yeah. No thanks, yeah.
Yeah, so is every other cryptid. You know?
Yeah. So I'm gonna do a little bit of after-school work. I'm gonna try maybe see a couple scenes from a movie, maybe find that game, and get a little more in-depth.
That'd be cool. What's the name of that game? Yeah. Do you have it on hand?
Oh, God. I had it just a minute ago. Good thing we're editing this. I remember it... We don't have to put this in, but I remember it looking like shit. It's a Filipino game.
Filipino survival... Oregon?
It's a game from 2016 developed in the Philippines called Nightfall Escape.
Ah.
Ooh, I'm definitely checking this out.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
It's on Steam.
I did not know that's how the Mononongle is spelled.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure.
It's got 2.2 stars on Steam.
Hell yeah. Yeah, so that's my creature for this week. I'm salivating, practically chomping at the bit to hear about this special thing you've got for me.
Because I just get such a rush from teasing you about what I'm bringing. don't take that clip out of context, ever, nah, please. Fine. But yeah, it is so much fun for me to just be like, yeah, hey, you ever heard of this? And you're like, no. And I'm like, oh, okay. And I'll drop you like a picture here and there of it. And you're just like, I fucking hate this thing already.
This week's little teaser photo was tremendous. So please go on.
Okay, yeah. Without further ado, I'd like to tell you about the Glimmer Man.
The Glimmer Man.
Yeah, yeah. So you spend a lot of time in the woods.
Me particularly?
Yeah, you particularly.
Not as much as I would like, but I'm an avid woods guy.
Yeah, you ever been out in the woods and just been like something's off?
Without going into too much detail, I felt that way with you not too long ago.
Oh, really?
Yeah, when we went on our camping trip a couple months ago, I got a little spooked at one point.
Oh, we don't have to. Can you tell the story without doxing anybody?
Nah, it's we'll save that for another one. We'll have a personal experiences episode.
Oh, baby. That's going to be a fun episode.
Mm-hmm.
Is it because I made you sleep on the ground?
I slept beneath the Lord's stars, yeah.
All right, well, this creature, right? People report they'll just be out in the woods and it'll be a normal day, and it has such a varied range of reports. And but one thing that's really, really common in all of them, well, in most of them, is that like the woods go dead fucking quiet. Like, no birds, no wind, no animals, like, nothing. Just dead silence.
Okay, and I mean, ugh.
Usually a couple seconds after they notice this, they will notice the Glimmer Man, right? And I shit you not, man. Almost every single one of these sightings, they describe it as, they always go, have you seen The Predator? Like, the movie.
Oh, like the cloaking,
yeah,
like shimmer?
They will see like the shimmer cloaking effect from the Predator movie just standing off in the distance. People will see it appear from a lake, but a lot of times people see it just appear out of thin air, man. And that's the only way they can describe it, is like the Predator.
Is it like a North American phenomenon? Is it?
It is mainly North American, but okay. There's been some international stories as well. I read one from Peru, but it's weird because I initially thought that this like only took place in the woods. It doesn't. Majority of it takes place in the woods. But people have also claimed that like they'll just see like the Glimmer Man out of the corner of their eye. And like he just runs across the room and he's gone.
For y'all who don't know, I battle night terrors, something fierce, and like hearing that sentence just like dropped me.
Yeah.
put my gut down. Oh my god, bro.
I was working a 24-hour shift. I was up late. I was by myself, and like there were windows all around me, and it was like pitch black, and like I was just working in silence, just like listening to the click clack of my keyboard, and like, I don't know, every time I read one, it was like, yeah, I saw the Glimmer Man out of the corner of my eye and he sprinted across the room. I like, every time I read one of those, I would like lean in closer to my computer to where I had like no peripheral vision.
Yeah, that reminds me of working overnight shifts. Yeah, in glass homes that look out into the woods. To fucking hate that.
Oh man, glass homes that live out in, or look out into the woods. Hate that a lot.
So, does it touch you? Does it spook you?
Let me go ahead and get into some sightings, because a lot of people report different things. Most of the time, okay. People just report like it's there and it's gone, right? So this one comes from a student at the University of Florida. She went out hiking with her dog one day on the Gainesville-Hawthorne State Trail. And here you go. Well, on this particular day, me and Toby, my dog, were about 4 miles into the trail. It was a weekday around 11 a.m., so there were very few people. At the time of our encounter, there was no one around, just me and Toby. As we were walking, I was just looking around as we hiked, you know, looking for wildlife, enjoying the sun and Mother Nature and all of her beauty. When all of a sudden, Toby froze. He saw something. He just stood there with his ears perked up, his tail sticking straight out, and he was staring into the trees. I assumed he saw some birds or something else in the trees, so I asked him, "What do you see, Toby? What is it, boy?" He didn't bark, but I could tell something had caught his attention. While he continued to stare, I started looking in the same direction as he was, trying to see what he was looking at. At this point, Toby's demeanor started to change. His tail went from sticking straight out to now lower between his legs. He began to whimper a little, and started pulling on the leash like he wanted out of there. I continued to look into the trees, trying to spot whatever it was that was scaring him, and that's when I saw it. It's very hard to describe, but this thing looked clear, but not quite. It was in the shape of a human, meaning that it had a head, torso, two arms, and two legs. It was see-through. The thing that stood out the most was the glowing yellow eyes. That was the only thing that wasn't clear. As crazy as it sounds, this thing looked like the alien in the Predator movies whenever it was cloaking itself. It was standing on a large tree branch, hanging on by its right arm, and was looking directly at me and Toby. It slowly began to crouch down and tried to hide behind the trunk of the tree, like it noticed us noticing him. I don't know why I say him. I absolutely have no idea the sex of this strange creature, if that's what you want to call it. I tried to hide, like I said, but you could still see portions of it behind the tree. I was frozen. I was mesmerized by this thing. I was just staring at it, trying to figure out what it was. I didn't want to take my eyes off of it in fear that I might lose it. This thing was so damn camouflaged. If I looked away, I might not be able to find it again. So I just stared, ignoring Toby and his whimpers. Then it moved. It swung through the trees effortlessly and made almost no sound. It would move to a few trees, then freeze, look back at us, I guess to determine if we were watching it or not. I got the feeling this thing did not want to be seen. It would move, then freeze, crouch down, and put itself between us and the tree it was in.
Oh.
It would sit there for a few minutes, then move again. I wanted to follow it, but everything in my body said no, so I just watched. And eventually, it disappeared into the forest. So that's, it's okay. A lot of times it's just observing, you know?
That's horrifying, but okay.
Now, here's an excerpt from another story that I took. And this one is, this one takes place in a house. At some point, I felt like I wasn't alone. I glanced over at the door leading to the dining room, and I saw it. And I was struck with fear. Standing right inside the doorway was what I can only describe as the Predator, except it was human in shape and size. It couldn't have been any taller than me, and I'm only 5'7". It didn't move. It stood fixed in that position for several seconds. Then it lunged forward and crossed the room very quickly. All I could do was close my eyes and cover my face, and I felt air brush my hands and arms like something had moved quickly towards me. After what felt like several minutes, I managed to convince myself to lower my arms and open my eyes. I was alone in the room. Whatever was there was not anywhere to be seen. So, it's a lot of varying reports. Like, it's there, and then it notices that you noticed, and then it just dips out. You know?
That's the worst.
Yeah.
Like the interaction that you have with it is so interesting.
Yeah, like, it's just there, and then it's just gone, you know? So there's a lot of theories as to what it is because of this, right? There's theories that it's, like, cloaked aliens. There's theories that it's actually cloaked humans, and it's, like, advanced military tech.
Yeah, kind of where my mind was going.
I don't know, because, like, none of these bases, or none of these stories say anything about being near, like, a military base or something like that.
Yeah.
But then again, if you have an invisible suit, you know, maybe it's at an invisible base. You know what I mean?
God damn it.
There's hundreds of government buildings that we just don't know exist. You know? Mm-hmm. I'm certain of it. Right? And then another theory is interdimensional beings, which, I mean, that can make sense to me, as in, like, you know, because in some of these stories, it's like, it's just there, and it's gone, and it doesn't really care if you saw it or not. So maybe it's like something just pressing on the barrier between our dimension and theirs. Maybe like a fourth dimensional being that's like close to the fifth or third dimension, you know?
What kind of shadow does a fourth dimensional being leave? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
fuck that. Okay.
It's like refracting. It's just weird, you know?
I wonder what sightings like these are like in a culture that isn't so into the Predator movies.
Say again? I'm sorry.
Like, what is a sighting like for a person who isn't so intimately familiar with the Predator films?
Well,
like,
I don't know. A lot of people, a lot of people, they have a sighting, they have an experience, and they know the stigma around having an encounter down deep inside.
Yeah.
And they're like, I'm just never going to talk about it, you know?
Go ahead.
They find out that there are other people that have had encounters, and then they start to talk about it. So some of these encounters are from, like, 1970, 1960, 1980. I read a lot of encounters last night. But they'll, like, now that they're just now confessing to it and being like, look, I have to share this story, the easiest thing to compare it to is the Predator. Because you're right. For sure. How would you describe that, you know?
Like hearing these stories and sort of going through an encounter in my mind, it makes me think of that, I don't know if it's like a condition or like a psychological process. It's called like pareidolia, I think.
Pareidolia?
It's the phenomenon where people, like, they see faces in patterns. It's part of, like, our pattern recognition in our brain that, like, we'll see, like, a man in the moon.
Or
we'll see,
like,
Jesus Christ's face on a napkin or something.
Yeah, Jesus in the toast.
Yeah, like, it's, like, if it's something with that part of our brain, like, building something that we can recognize, and it may be something that our minds cannot handle, like trying to build something for us to visualize.
Oh, 100%. I mean, we talked about this on our last episode over a year ago. Like, like our brain would make something to fill the gaps because, like you said, our brain is pattern recognition based. So, like, if we're seeing something and we have no fucking clue what to make of it, our brain would try to do something, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, I don't know. It could be something like that, you know? Maybe this is just how we see a fourth dimensional being, you know?
That makes me really uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm. I got one more sighting for you.
Okay.
And then I'll get into the really, really, really juicy part of this.
Oh, please do.
It was the fall of 1978, deer season in particular. I live near a very small town called Sutches, Georgia. It only has a population at that time around 1,000 people. It's in the southeast end of the Chattahoochee National Forest. I'm an avid hunter, and I was hunting on public land in the National Forest just up the road from Sutches in an area called Cooper's Creek. I had scouted out the area during the summer, so late July or early August. I knew where all the game trails were. I knew where water was located, which happens to be a small creek known as Bryant Creek. And I knew where all the ridges and gaps were. I've hunted in and around this area for years and was very familiar with the area. Well, when I finally located a good spot, or at least a spot I thought would give me a good chance at a large buck, I set up my lock on tree stand in a tree about 12 feet off the ground. I trimmed the branches to give me some shooting lanes, and was basically all set for deer season. Oh, I was hunting with a 12-gauge shotgun. Rifle hunting is not allowed in the area. Okay. Cool. Good job following the rules. So fast forward to early November. I'd been hunting out of my tree stand about 6 times. By the time this particular hunt happened, it was late afternoon, around 4:15 p.m. I wanted to get there earlier, but work held me up. We had hired this new kid named Ryan. Now, this was my normal routine for a Friday afternoon during deer hunting season, and my wife knew that I would not be home until around 8:30 p.m., and even later if I bagged something. I parked my truck at the trailhead and started hiking into the woods to find my tree stand. The walk would take about 15 to 20 minutes. You want to walk pretty quickly, but not run. You don't want to make too much noise moving through the woods. You don't want to spook any of the wildlife. So, do you ever wonder, do you think that the Glimmer Man is telling himself that as he's moving through the woods? And we're the wildlife?
You don't want to awaken the lower life forms and freak them out.
As I was walking to my stand, the very first thing I noticed was how quiet it was. I mean, it was very quiet. I didn't hear any of the normal chirping or singing birds, no insects, nothing, and only a slight breeze. I thought it was a bit strange, but continued on to my deer stand. I finally arrived and climbed up and settled in. Once I was comfortable, I jacked around into the chamber, put the safety on my shotgun, and began surveying my surroundings, looking for anything out of place. Sometimes deer bed down during the day, and you can spot their antlers. You can spot their antlers above the tall grass and underbrush. As I was doing this, I began to have this ominous feeling that someone was watching me. I don't really know how to explain it, other than I had this deep feeling deep within me, in my core, in my gut, something wasn't right. Well, I tried to ignore it for a while, telling myself to stop being such a coward. There's nothing out here but you, some deer hopefully, some squirrels, skunks, and other little critters. As time passed, the feeling only intensified. Kept looking at my watch, wondering how much time I had left until dusk. Should I leave early? I thought to myself. Of course not. A huge deer was probably only moments away. As I was sitting there arguing with myself, I caught movement to my right side in the trees. I slowly turned my head and began looking through the tree canopy, and that's when I saw it. This is the part that still gives me chills. Even writing this now freaks me out, because I honestly don't know what I saw. As I was staring into the trees, I saw what looked like a large bodybuilder, but completely blurry, moving through the trees. I could clearly see the outline of the figure, but the rest was blurry, like I couldn't focus on it. It looked like a clear, gelatinous blob, but in the shape of a human, a large human. And whenever it would stop, I completely lost sight of it. It blended into its background perfectly. I just watched it for what seemed like an eternity, but actuality, it was like more like 15 minutes. It moved through the trees effortlessly, like a monkey or squirrel. It never really looked at me while I was watching it. Maybe it was right before, and that's why I got the feeling someone was watching me. I don't know. It slowly moved off, and I was scared. And I was scared about my walk back to my truck, so I waited another 30 minutes. It was getting dark, and now I slowly climbed out of my stand. Once I hit solid ground, I wasted no time. I sprinted all the way back to my truck, jumped into the cab, and my lungs were on fire. That was the farthest and fastest I've run since basic training back in 1967. I just sat there in my truck and tried to regain my breath. I drove home and said nothing to my wife or anyone else for a few weeks. And he then goes on to talk about in 1988 when he saw the Predator for the first time. He goes, "That's what I saw." And
rocks. That's so cool.
So yeah, there you go. That's how someone who's never seen the Predator would describe it, you know?
Yeah, but to have that like that moment in the theater is super, super interesting.
Oh, I would go absolutely apeshit if that happened in the theater.
If I ever see a film and like something that like happens and one of my night terrors shows up in there, I'm gonna lose my goddamn mind. I'm gonna freak out.
Yeah, that would be absolutely insane.
Mm-hmm.
So now I want to move into that thing I told you about where it has that sliver of evidence.
Okay.
Now, have you ever seen the Missing 411 documentaries?
The Missing 411 documentaries. I believe you were talking to me about this prior. Just a very tertiary, like, I've heard it.
Well, there are a series of documentaries and books about mysterious disappearances, and I wanted to include this one because it's insane. It's not a disappearance, but the guy who does these documentaries, I can't remember his name, it's David Pilates? I might be butchering that, but whatever. So this is in Lima, Ohio. Right, a woman named Jan Maccabee and her husband Bruce Maccabee live in Lima, Ohio, and her husband Bruce is a optical physicist, right? So, and they're both outdoorsmen, and they own enough land that they can hunt on their own property. So Jan has a deer stand set up maybe like 100 feet into their property, right? And so she goes and gets up in there, and she says that in her deer stand she can hear the high school band practicing some 2 miles away, and that'll be important later. But you know,
okay,
she's an experienced hunter, right? And she pulls out her phone, took some pictures because she's, you know, it's the first day of the season. She's excited to hunt. And then, you know, it's the dead silence, right? That comes in these stories. Like, no, nothing.
Oh, right? Oh no.
And she thinks that she has something in her eyes, right? Mm. Like an eye floater. And so she tries, like, wiping it away. But it's still there.
Oh, bro.
And she describes it as a large piece of saran wrap, which is a very, very strange description of this thing to me. But imagine if you saw a piece of saran wrap stretched behind two trees and, like, the shimmer that it would make.
Yeah.
Right? Okay.
Like, a sort of, like, soap bubbly, like, light reflection.
Yeah, like it's okay. Refracting light, you know, like it, okay. There's nothing there except the reflection. Mm-hmm. Right? And she said it was hanging on the tree, and then it reaches over to the next tree 12 to 14 feet away, and it moved like an amorphous blob, and then was just gone. And she said that encounter lasted about 9 to 11 seconds. Right? So like I said, Jan was taking pictures on her phone. And, this is nuts, right? So, her husband, the optical physicist, he was like, oh, tell me more. Oh, you took pictures. Let me see your phone. Right? So she took pictures on her phone, which at the time, it was a BlackBerry Pearl 8130. That was the model of the phone, right? And the native resolution of photos taken on that phone is 1024 by 768. Right?
All right.
But there is a single picture that she took, like, while she was out in the woods, that had a automatic resolution of 528 by 400. Right? And they don't, okay, they don't say in the video, or they don't say in the documentary, if she was trying to get a picture of the, of whatever she saw, of the Glimmer Man, right? But I'm going to send you a picture of what she, like, here's a picture that she took, like one of just her normal pictures of her out hunting, right?
And all right,
that's in the native resolution, right? And here is the picture she took that for some reason has an edited, like pre-edited resolution. And it's important because, you know, a lot of people report in, like, alien sightings that they can make electronics faulty.
Okay.
But now look at that picture that I sent you, the one that's in the weird resolution.
Yeah,
like,
for sure.
That's weird. It looks exactly like what she's describing.
Yeah, like I'm looking at maybe the surface of, like, water or something, like lights, like,
yeah,
being weird. Yeah.
So she has that picture and they have no idea what it is, right? Now, their nephew, a kid named Matthew, who went to that high school, emailed Bruce, the optical physicist, that no shit, they saw a UFO during band practice.
Okay, same night,
same night. Time. This was around sundown, right? They were, okay, they were hanging out around dusk. The band was practicing 2 miles away at the high school on the football field, and they saw like a bright light that, the way they described it, like, fluctuated in, like, brightness and, like, size, and then just disappeared. And these sightings happened at around the same time.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it's fucking crazy. It's so weird.
No.
Two isolated incidents around the same time. And, you know, so the reason that I read the first part of that last story that I did before this one, right, and I wanted to bring this up, is, like, a lot of these guys, they don't want to seem crazy, right? So they'll tell you all their qualifications, I guess. Like, this guy's clearly an experienced hunter, and he's been in the area for a super long time.
Yeah, they were detailed, they were meticulous, yeah.
And if you're doing something every day, right, if you're going through your daily routine, you're going to notice when something is fucking weird. Right?
That makes sense to me, yeah.
Like, that's why, like, I don't know. It's just, like, these guys have been in the woods their whole life, and then, like, one day they see something weird, and they, like, convince themselves, they're like, dude, I'm not crazy. But, like, what the fuck did I just see?
A lot of these stories had that sort of thing that I was trying to describe, that, like,
that just
instinctual, that gut thing.
Yeah, that fucking, that genuineness, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But let me move into the next portion of this, right? So, it's the movie, The Predator, right?
The Predator.
So the man who oversaw the design for the cloaking effect of the Predator. That man is named Joel Hynek, right? And he's worked in the CGI, or he's worked in movies for a while. He did CGI or like special effects for a lot of stuff. Now that man's father is a man named J. Allen Hynek, who was a astronomer and was brought on to work on two UFO projects in the U.S. government, Project Sign and Project Blue Book.
Oh, my man.
Now, Hynek was brought on for scientific analysis and, like, to be a consultant, and he was a skeptic originally, but he changed his mind. Here's a quote from J. Allen Hynek. "Ridicule is not part of the scientific method, and people should not be taught that it is. The steady flow of reports, often made in concert by reliable observers, raises questions of scientific obligation and responsibility." So, what do you think? Did J. Allen Hynek tell little baby Joel a story about a cloaked alien, and that was the inspiration for the Predator? And it was the same cloaked man that everyone is seeing now? Like, isn't that fucking insane?
There's definitely this sort of line, for sure. And I'm just trying to, like, I'm drawing it in my head as we speak. Like, this man works in UFO adjacent projects.
Yeah.
And yeah, talks to his son, speaks, tells these stories, or tries to discuss them, I don't know, at the dinner table.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I could see someone being influenced by that their whole life, and then finding themselves in, like, artistically expressing that. Oh my gosh, I need to watch Predator again.
Yeah. Researching all this, I was like, I was telling my wife, I was like, "Hey, honey, you want to watch Predator?" And she's like, "I do not want to watch fucking Predator." And I'm like, "Well, it was worth a shot." But you know,
oh my gosh,
maybe she'll come around. Maybe I can get her on Alien.
There's something about this one.
Did you like that? I saved the best for last. That connection is absolutely mind-blowing to me.
This one was just such a roller coaster. Like, some of these stories were so visceral. They were so, like,
oh yeah, the stories are insane.
Like, I frequently, when I hear stories like this, like a sighting or an alleged encounter, I try to put myself in their shoes. Like, I react very empathetically, and I'm just like, you know, there's a difference between a gust in the wind, like something moving, and like seeing something.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, there's definitely a difference between like being creeped out, because I've been creeped out. I get creeped out all the time. I spend a lot of time in the woods. I spend a lot of time camping. You know, I've been creeped out, but I've never been like, "What was that?" You know?
Yeah, I'm definitely more prone to the immediate, like, startled. It's not, I've never truly felt that slow, tense, like, rising fear that's being described, like that recognition of something being wrong.
Yeah. I don't know if I want to feel it. I imagine it's like the startle, but it never goes away.
Fuck that, bro. And the other part that got me was the animals.
Just the dead silence.
There's, you know, pretty extensive reporting on animal sensing things like natural disasters, or sensing like things going wrong. So like seeing and hearing like the environment responding to these events, it fucking haunts me.
Oh yeah. If it's ever silent in the woods, like, I'm leaving.
I I had thought at one point during the story, you had talked about the band students playing, and during the interaction with the Glimmer Man, this person couldn't hear anything, like the woods went silent where they're at.
Yeah.
I thought, like, something about the Glimmer Man had, like a sound dampening around it or something. Like, it somehow, like, didn't allow noise to escape its vicinity or something like that.
Ooh.
I was like, oh my god.
That's
like,
crazy.
If you're near it, you can't hear or something.
Yeah. Huh. That makes sense. I mean, if we are to believe that this is, like, technology, you know, that, like, that'd be insane. I mean, obviously, this is, like, it's got to be for something like observation, right?
Or in a physics sense. Like, if light isn't reacting in a way that we expect, maybe sound is also, like, sound waves are also being weird in a way that we don't expect.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. So, I don't know, man. The Glimmer Man, it's fucking wild.
I'm gonna put my money down on, like, dimensional beings. That's what's sitting right with me after hearing the story.
Okay. So, dimensional beings, right? Do you think it's accidental, or there's intent? Like, they're just going about their daily lives and they don't even realize they're brushing up against the barrier? Or do you think they're, like, reaching out, being like, hey?
It's like, how often in your day do you go around thinking about what your actions are doing to, like, the microbes on your finger?
I guess that makes sense.
That's where I'm initially going, but a lot of these stories talk like there's some kind of exchange.
Oh, yeah, some kind of
interaction. So maybe it's more like a fly. Like, you're not really thinking about it, but once it, like, gets into your attention, you're like, what the fuck is this?
Yeah, I mean, it's camouflaged, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Maybe that sound dampening aura, right? If all sound is gone around you, right? And, like, you know, that would cause me to be like, what the fuck, and start looking a little closer.
Yeah, you start stressing out, you start looking, you start acting a little strange, yeah.
Maybe it has, like, this sound dampening aura, and, you know, it could be around you all the time, but when it gets close enough for you to, like, not hear a goddamn thing, like, then you might start looking a little harder, and then you might see the Glimmer Man.
When you know something's up, yeah.
Like I was saying, I mean, there's, like, a lot of encounters. There's some encounters where, you know, the Glimmer Man doesn't even notice you, and you notice him.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's other accounts where it's, like, you look at him, and he's fucking looking back. You know? So I really don't know where to put my finger on this, but
It's that kind of story, or this sort of dot connecting moments, and this really, like, spine tingling that really makes me glad that this is happening. That really, like, makes this show, like, makes me excited to do it. That was a tremendous journey to go on, to, like, sit there and think about this thing out there. I love that.
Well, you know, I'm happy I can keep you entertained with the Glimmer Man. And thank you for teaching me about the Mononongal and the fucking war crimes that were committed in its name. But, I mean, you got anything else to say to the people listening?
All I can think of is look over your shoulder every once in a while. Just take a look, yeah. And if you see any kind of shimmering in the night or any other interesting, cursed, horrifying encounter that you would like to share with us, we would absolutely love to hear it at supermadtower@gmail.com or on our Twitter page at madtowerradio. please, folks, reach out to us. Tell us your stories. Share in our scent up the Mad Tower. Thanks.
Well, this has been Mad Tower Radio, and at this time, we are ending transmission.